My name is Matthew Knutson. I'm the geospatial librarian and curator of maps at the New York Public Library, where I oversee the collections of the Lionel Pincus and Princess Furiel Map Division. We house about 500,000 maps, 25,000 books and atlases dating from the early 16th century to the present day, and encompassing scales from the global to the local. We engage a wide range of users, researchers, and enthusiasts alike, of any age and at all levels of academic achievement. Cartography and maps are abstract symbolic representations of places, fundamental tools for understanding and interpreting the world, whether it's the physical landscape, the topography, the hydrography, the elemental forces, or the human landscapes we mold from the physical world. Because of the ever-changing nature of the world, today's cartographic representations are immediately part of the historical record, waymarkers or signposts alluding to the past landscapes. And so we continue to collect and preserve these newly historical maps. Comparing and juxtaposing these cartographic signposts serves as a powerful means by which we read, interpret, and understand landscapes old and new, the spatial and temporal matrix through which human and personal narratives are inscribed. Seen through this type of historical cartographic lens, so to speak, current human events take on new meanings and can be seen from new perspectives in stark relief from the past. At the New York Public Library, we interact with a spectrum of researchers, in my case using maps to help foster the deep cartographic literacy necessary to build such interpretations of landscapes or to root one's understanding in place root one's understanding of a place in the past. With children, this is an unusually potent experience, often being the very first awareness they have of the history of their neighborhood or of their city. Rich historical documents such as maps make it easier to feel connected and to feel rooted in the past, locating us spatially in the long arc of history. Comparing old places on maps to our understanding of those same places as they are now exposes us to the fluid and the dynamic nature of geography, opening up lines of inquiry in those naturally curious, inquisitive young minds. Why does this place look like it does now? Is this kind of change still happening? Who decides what a place is going to be like in the future? What's involved in making a change like that? So this inquisitiveness is one of the essential pieces in the development of historical perspective, in the development of critical faculties and creative thinking. Understanding the dynamics of how places change as read through historical maps can teach us how we might affect positive transformation in the places we inhabit today, as well as prepare us for the changes that are quite beyond our control. So what better way to talk with students about the dramatic and sometimes utterly catastrophic transformation of urban fabric that takes place during the course of large public works projects than by examining something like a detailed fire insurance map for the neighborhoods that were raised during the construction of something like the Cross Bronx Expressway or the Brooklyn Bridge. So what better graphical entree into a discussion of the moral calculus weighing the projects against the deleterious effects on not only those residents relocated through eminent domain, but also of the residents divided, overshadowed, and whose environment is polluted by such a project. And what better way to make sense of the chaos of the past week, embedding it in the history and the geography, than by examining a map of Manhattan showing the high and low water marks, as well as the progressive landfill expansions of the 18th and 19th centuries, an area that is nearly coterminous, that's my map, with those flooded and evacuated just last week, almost the same area. And finally, what better way to get students excited about studying, for example, the American Revolution than by looking at a map that was commissioned by Great Britain in the run-up to the Revolution. It was owned by one of the great British colonial surveyors, John Montressor. It's available in room 117 downstairs. John Montressor, this British colonial surveyor, he marked it by hand with the fortifications, with the outlines of pier expansions, and with the areas that were burned by the Patriots, or burned as the Patriots fled up north Manhattan's West Side during the Battle of Long Island. Not only can we see what was burned and recognize some of those streets, locations, and places, but we can see where that shoreline was then, the locations of farms and orchards along the Bowery, the canal that sits in Canal Street, the salt marshes in Tribeca and Stuyvesant Town. And while we continue to find value in working with individuals and groups in person with maps, we actively are digitizing more heavily used portions of the collections, a process that increases by orders of magnitude, as we know, the audiences that who would normally have access to such information. Doing so is a prerequisite for further transformation of these historical documents into entirely new bodies of information, when taken together are actually greater than the sum of their parts and have potential to surface past landscapes to the present day. Take, for example, a place name found on a scanned map, Jones's Wood, a name that not even our grandparents have heard of, a forested area on Manhattan's Upper East Side that was, in the middle of the 19th century, a working-class refuge with a band shell, a hotel, a theater, and nearby beer gardens, accessible by ferries on the East River, the Third Avenue trains. Jones's Wood, in its heyday, regularly drew weekend crowds of 40, 50, 60,000 people, according to the newspapers of the time. But without an appearance in a textbook, how are we to know this place even existed? This is the Upper East Side. More pressingly, if we've collectively forgotten what this place is called, how can we know how to look for it in the growing treasure troves of digitized information in places like Google Books and the National Newspaper Digitization Project, let alone something like Wikipedia? Locating these places that are lost, so to speak, and building a referential web of historical geography is something we can only do after we've digitized old maps. So that connections can be made, so that sometime in the near future, a researcher or student can simply zoom into a place on a map without any prior knowledge of that place, dial back to an earlier time frame, and learn all about something like Jones's Wood through the old newspapers, articles, images, and so on that have been digitized at cultural heritage institutions like this. To conclude, this type of extension and transformation of cultural heritage collections into the digital world is predicated on their continued growth, conservation, and preservation, so that inquiring minds of all age can see the present and past as well as visualize their future.